This is Unhurried, and I'm your host, Doug Kyle. You know, life can feel like a race, rushing to the next thing, never time to reflect. But there is incredible value in slowing down with God to take in His perspective, His presence, His pace. I guess one of the roughest things about going through hard times is not knowing what God is up to. That's why in really the epic book in the Bible about suffering, the book of Job, we're given this behind-the-scenes insider information. This is episode 19 of season 2 of Unhurried. I'm your host, Doug Kyle. Welcome to those who are listening and viewing along. Ryan and I are in the studio here.
Yeah.
Ryan is the one wearing the Maple Leafs hat.
Yes.
The Toronto Maple Leafs. So I noticed you wore one last week, too. I didn't say anything about it. I almost didn't. And this week you're wearing one, too. So big hockey fan.
Huge hockey fan. I've been playing hockey my whole life. Yeah. And the kids are in their first official hockey season. And I'm, you know, the coach. And or one of the coaches. And
wait, kids plural.
Yes. So Remy,
both your son and daughter.
Both my son and daughter, because they're only 22 months apart. So they both happen to fit into the same age group right now. So Evie's the youngest that you can be eligible to play, and Remy's kind of right on the cusp of getting bumped up to the next group or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
and so. You're the coach.
Yes, I'm one of the.
How fun is that?
Yeah. One of our close friends is the head coach, and then I have the privilege of being the assistant coach. We kind of share the load. You know, he's got a busy season at work, so I've had to be the head coach for a few of the games and a few of the practices. And I did not realize how much fun this was going to be.
Have your kids adopted your love for the Maple Leafs?
Well, so the thing about the Maple Leafs is that I grew up a Kings fan, and then when Mandy and I started dating, we kind of adopted the Ducks as our team. And then we could always go to games, and we had a bunch of friends that went to games. So we kind of became Ducks fans, Anaheim Ducks fans after that. And then when we first got married, we literally lived, I mapped it out one time. I think it was like 3.5 miles away from the actual arena. So I would run to the arena and run back. That was like my workout. Like, cause I knew, I was like, okay, it's 3.5 miles. I can run there and then run back. And, so that was it was very much a part of our young adulthood, young married life. We'd go to the games and we'd hang out with friends after, and it was really fun. And then now that my son has been getting into hockey, his favorite player is a guy named Austin Matthews. And he's the best American, born player in the NHL right now, and he also plays for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And so we just watch almost every game together, my son and I. And so we've adopted now the Toronto Maple Leafs as our team.
How
you know,
fun.
So it's so much fun. And he just talks about, the Leafs so much, and he talks about, Austin Matthews. I've never been to Toronto. Have you ever been to Toronto?
No.
Yeah. I've never been to Toronto. I've been to Vancouver, but I've never been to Toronto, that would be great to go one time and, we've never been, but he just loves the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he's got Austin Matthews shirts and jerseys, so he's like all about it. He's all about Austin Matthews, so.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, so Ryan's the one sporting the Toronto Maple Leafs garb here, the hat here, supporting the team right there.
Yep.
I'm the one in the Mostra sweatshirt.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, so supporting our local mom pop coffee shop.
Yeah, there you go. Well, not so much anymore. I mean,
they're getting big time now.
Yeah, they're a big deal.
They're at Petco Park now, so that's big time.
Yeah. I've been keeping my mother-in-law up to date on all the Mostra things, because when I first moved down, Mostra was like, just in a warehouse basically. You know? And so when she would come down and visit, and especially when my son was born, I think at that time they only had one store. you know, so we would go, I'd get a coffee or we'd go, you know, because it was by the church and stuff. So we'd go get coffee at Mostra. And I'm like, she's like, how's Mostra doing? I was like, I mean,
they're blowing up.
They're taking over San Diego is what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you're listening, just listening now, you can kind of picture us here in the this makeshift studio that we're in. Unhurried is meant to be sort of a deeper dive into what we talk about on Sunday mornings, and we're in a brand new series now, which is called Now I See. And I continue to get really good feedback from people. Do you as well, as far as people that are listening or watching on Sunday mornings? People still talk about it to me. They come up to me and talk about it.
Yeah. Well, I think you also do a really good job of getting us excited for a new series, kind of teasing what might be coming, you know, along as the series progresses, but then also keeping it, you know, interesting, even though there's sometimes your sermon series are on what I would consider to be like typical pastoral, you know, sermon titles or sermon topics.
Yeah.
You know, you always do a really, really good job of keeping it interesting, giving it a new perspective, pulling in other scriptures and things like that that kind of tie into things. So yeah, I've been getting nothing but great feedback, and especially from yesterday. I don't know if it was just Mother's Day, you know, and talking to people in the lobby and stuff. It was like really good responses of the topic, and such a heavy topic, but also, you know, speaks to what Jesus does for us in our life, you know?
Yeah. Well, we'll get into it a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
This gives us a chance to go a little deeper. Although sometimes the comments I'm getting are not following up on the biblical topic so much as some of the stuff that the peripheral stuff that we talk about as well. Remember last week we talked about, you were talking about a band, and the more people in a band you have, kind of, you know, your scope or your focus is more limited. And I talked about, if I was in a orchestra, I would play the triangle.
Right.
It was such an off the cuff comment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that somehow hit a chord with someone in our church. And he said that I should play the cymbals. But just a single cymbal. just one
by
itself. Just one, so that I can't mess that up if I just have one cymbal. So that is, I thought it'd be a triangle, but now my new instrument is going to be the single cymbal in the orchestra.
Yeah, speaking of cymbals, our drummer that plays with us at church on Sundays, he put a cymbal like right in between where I can like turn around so I can't see his face.
Oh, okay. So he's blocking his
face? So he's blocking his face.
Okay.
And I go, how do you know if I have to like tell you something?
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I'll know. And I was like, but you can't see me.
Yeah. You know, you put a big barrier between you and
basically,
me.
Basically. I was like, do we not? I feel like I'm talking to like the Tim Allen, you know, like the neighbor, you know, like.
See his eyes above the fence?
Yes, basically. I was like, dude, you can't see me. Like, how are we supposed to communicate, you know?
Maybe it was by design.
I think it was. That was a subtle message. Yeah. You know? I get it.
I wanted to, before we get into the topic for today, I wanted to give you a quick update on the merch mugs.
Cool.
A couple things happening there. First of all, I did give one to my mom for Mother's Day because we talked about it. So she actually got a little bit more than that, but not much more than that. So that was the prize, the Unhurried mug. But I love you, Mom. Thanks for listening. You're the best. Yep. Did your mom get one yet?
I didn't get her one yet. No, I didn't. I didn't think about it ahead of time. You know,
you need to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she's probably counting on it because you mentioned it.
I did mention it. I did. Yeah. I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And also we're still waiting to hear back the mugs that went on the cruise ship.
Yeah.
Actually, two mugs were carried on the Disney cruise ship. They were handed off to someone who knows Thor.
Really?
She worked on the ship, and she knows Thor. He was not on that particular cruise,
but
she knows who he is. She promised that she would get it to him.
Really?
With a note.
Yes.
From this member of our church that hand carried it there. So she got one. She also gave one to carry to Thor, and she heard this great story about, oh yeah, I know Thor. This woman on the cruise ship said, this employee, she says, I know him. He runs a Bible study, and everybody who's in the Bible study, Christians on board the ship, are called Friends of Thor.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's what they they go as. So apparently he's like really the one who organizes it.
Yeah. We should try and see if we can get him on the podcast next time he's, you know, docked in San Diego.
Thor, I'm hoping you're listening to this somewhere. You said you were going to listen to Unhurried. If you got the mug, you need to let me know at unhurriedpodcast@gmail.com. Just let us know you got it, and we'll hook you up with a conversation on
that's
this.
Right.
We can't wait to hear from you.
Right.
It'll be really fun.
Whenever you're not in Asgard, you know, come. That's where you're looking at me like that's Thor's home world.
All right. All right. I'm revealing my lack.
Sorry.
I did watch one of the Marvel on Thor, but I forgot that.
Yeah. Asgard is where he lives.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Yeah. All right.
Sorry.
that's a deep cut right there for those Thor fans out there.
There you go.
All right. Well, we're going to do listener questions at the end of this series or this podcast. So we're saving that for the very end. But today we, as kind of Ryan alluded to, we began a new series yesterday. It's called Now I See, or today's kind of the first in our podcast discussions about it. It's going to be a quick series. We're just going to cover 3 weeks. We're looking at the book of Job, this epic book in the Bible. Many think it's the oldest book in the Bible, the first one written. And it deals with the age-old question of suffering, human suffering, and how do we make sense of it? And it's going to be a quick series. We're going to look at kind of yesterday we looked at what happened to Job, which I'll give you a quick overview of in a moment. Then we look at his conversation with his friends. I'm going to put friends in quotations. Sometimes they're friends, and sometimes they're not that helpful.
Right.
And then we're going to end with a look at what God says at the end of the book. But it's a great book that I sometimes have steered away from because it seems like it's such a heavy topic. And yet now that I'm into it, I'm thinking, man, this is so helpful for people to understand and to know. And really the key to understanding the whole book comes in the first two chapters. So that's what we kind of got into, and we'll talk about a little bit today. If you want to understand the whole book, and Job's kind of a long book, it's like 42 chapters long. But if you want to understand it, you really have to read the first two chapters. That becomes a lens through which you can understand the entire book. Here's a quick overview. Job had a great life. He was wealthy, had a great family. He was not more than that. We're introduced to him as being this incredibly righteous individual.
Yeah.
He was killing it spiritually. Just God's bragging on him. He says there's no one like him in the entire earth. So at first he's called the greatest man in the east, which would have been east of the area that Israel ended up kind of being planted in, but east of the Jordan area. But really God looks further than that, says in the entire earth there's no one like him. And so he's righteous. He's also just successful. He's got a wonderful family. And then he loses practically everything in a single day. And then much of the rest of the book is really his laments of what he's experiencing and his friends trying to comfort him and mostly failing at that task. And then it ends with four chapters at the end of the book where God finally speaks and asks Job a series of questions. He doesn't really answer the why question, why does suffering happen, but his answers are amazing nonetheless. But as I said, really the key to understanding the whole book comes in chapter 1 and 2, what we kind of touched on yesterday. And so I want to get into that a little bit more. I want people to understand that this, if you get this, you can understand Job. Otherwise, we could be led astray with what some of the things it says. So in chapter 1, we're given this glimpse into heaven, and we're told one day, verse 6 of chapter 1, one day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them, which is kind of weird. already that Satan was there and had access to God. We're not told exactly why or how often this happens, but he did. And then verse 7 says, "The Lord said to Satan, 'Where have you come from?' And Satan answered the Lord, 'Up from roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth on it.'" So the earth is really Satan's territory. Mm-hmm. It's where he spends his time. He's called the prince of this world by Jesus. And so it makes us realize that there is a spiritual battle mm-hmm. that we're all involved mm-hmm. in here at Earth. There's spiritual schemes and spiritual powers that are at work beyond what we can see. A lot of times we blame things on our circumstances and on just very, you know, basic kinds of things that we're encountering from day to day, but we don't lift our eyes to see that there's something, you know, much deeper that's mm-hmm. happening. Mm-hmm. Well, Satan comes, you know, into God's presence. God brags about Job, and then Satan challenges God, saying, "Well, the only reason that Job is doing so well in life and is so righteous is because you're blessing him with all these things in his life. Mm-hmm. You know, why wouldn't he?" He basically says, "Of course, Job worships you. You've stacked the deck. You've showered him with grace." And he says, he doesn't love you. He loves what you're giving him, all the perks, the wealth, the blessings in his life, the success that you've given him. And then he challenges God to test Job, to see if he would still praise him, still worship him, still walk with him, even if the blessings in his life were taken away. So the thing about that little episode is that we as readers, I don't know, it's sort of like a book where the narrator of the book tells you something as a reader that the characters in the story don't know.
Right, right.
We as readers have this information. We know what's going on in heaven, and Job doesn't, his friends don't, his wife doesn't. All the onlookers who see what's happening in his life, they don't know what's going on. And so they're left to jump to their own conclusions without this piece of information that we're given. This behind-the-scenes glimpse into what's going on into heaven. And by knowing that, what we're given, we have the ability to interpret correctly what's mm-hmm. happening, where Job sometimes isn't seeing things correctly. His friends certainly aren't seeing. His wife, I mean, poor wife, she's like, she only has one line in the whole book, and she does not look good.
She does not.
She's like, curse God and die.
Just die.
You know? So she doesn't look good, but no. she doesn't have this perspective either.
Right.
She doesn't have
right.
the advantage
right.
that we have.
Right.
And so this is really helpful. There, when I was in seminary,
sure.
and actually, I had this professor named John Salehammer, and I want to give him a shout out because he's written a commentary on Job that's been incredibly helpful. And I just want to, you know, so I've been quoting C.S. Lewis. I've been quoting Larry Osborne. Yeah. This is the first time for John Salehammer, right?
Okay, cool. We're keeping score.
But he's really helpful on this. He says that the book of Job presents the man Job as the example of the perfectly wise man. And he says perfectly wise because, right. as we talked about, he feared God. And mm-hmm. fearing God in the Bible is the definition of wisdom. And so Job is this righteous man, but he's also a wise man. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. And Job became the target of this great challenge. Satan attacks God, challenges God, accuses God in the first chapter, and says that, you know, divine wisdom, this wisdom that Job so much seems to have isn't really accurate. He doesn't really have it. He's just doing it for the perks that you have in his life. But we know that Job was righteous. Mm-hmm. We know that what he's undergoing in this story is the result of this divine test, not because he's done something wrong. Don't you feel like that's a lot of the way we as individuals, if we don't see behind the scenes, we often just jump to the conclusion that bad things happen because I did something wrong.
Yes. Yeah. It's very easy to blame, to start looking inward, you know, and blame yourself or even, you know, which is the, you know, not great either, which is blame others for your circumstances too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, it's gotta be because of that, why I'm going through this now, you know? So
we want so much to know why.
You
want to
know why. Yeah,
why did this happen? And the natural conclusion is, what did I do wrong?
Right, Right.
You know, we kind of beat ourselves up.
Yes.
Oh, I must have done something wrong. Right. God must be mad at me. I blew it. And like you say, sometimes we blame other people.
Right.
Why did this happen? Because this person was, you know, did something wrong.
Right.
Or is a bad person, and so that's why this is happening.
Well, even Jesus kind of tackled that theology for us too. You know, with the blind man at the well. You know, it's like people would look at him and say, "Oh, what did his parents do that he would be born this way, or that he would suffer in this way?" You know, and he kind of almost, you know, not almost, but he did kind of flip that over and say, you know, this is of a broken world that this is happening.
Yeah,
you know?
It has nothing to do with his sin or his parents' sin.
Right, right.
But that's so easy for us to do.
So easy.
So easy for us to go there. What did I do wrong? And what's even, you know, worse, I feel like, is when bad things happen to other people and we find ourselves going, well, they must have done something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I guess,
like, man, they messed up.
I don't know why they are facing this much suffering, but it must be because, you know, they've blown it.
Right.
And I think that's a natural protection instinct that we have
for sure
to protect ourselves because we feel like, oh no, that could happen to us. But if we can pin it on something they did wrong and we can say, well, I would never do that.
Right. Right.
Then we feel like, well, maybe I won't have to experience what they experienced.
Right.
If we have to live with the reality that they did nothing wrong and that still happened to them, that's kind of a scary place to be because it means that we can't control the suffering in our world.
Right, right.
And that comes into our lives.
Right, right.
And so that's where Job's friends were. That's where Job was. You know, he was, you know, second-guessing everything, but especially his friends. Especially his friends were saying that he had done something wrong. Mm-hmm. Going back to Salehammer said this. He says, we know that Job was righteous, even though throughout most of the book, Job's friends accused him of unrighteousness. And I like this. He continues, he says, the writer of the book has put us in the position of having to evaluate critically the various positions of Job and his friends. The reader is thus pulled into the discourse as one who knows more than the participants themselves. Mm-hmm. We know the big picture. They don't.
Right.
And so the way for us to understand the book of Job is for us to have those opening chapters in mind. We know, God, that Job is righteous. So when his friends say he's not, that he brought this upon themselves, they're wrong.
Yeah.
And we know that God is in control of everything because even Satan has to answer to him there in the opening chapters. So when there's this fear, when we're going through suffering or when we wonder, has God lost his control of things? We know that's not true either.
Mm-hmm.
That God, we also know that it's limited, that this has an end to it, that God is limiting it, and we know the end of the story, that God restores Job again. But again, all of that, when Job and his friends are in the middle of it, they don't see that.
So
I think that's really an important lens, because otherwise Job's friends, and they speak a lot in the book. They their first week, all they do is they show up and they don't say a word. They sit with him for 7 days in silence.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done, friends. Yeah. At that point, they're hitting it out of the park. They're doing great.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they open their mouth, that's when it goes downhill. That's what they start saying, Job, what did you do wrong?
Yeah.
That God is so angry at you. Obviously, you've sinned greatly.
Right, right. Well, to lose everything that Job, you know, had lost, you know, I think it's just so human just to say, you know, like to try and find an answer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's got to be a reason for this. You know what I mean? You know, sure, maybe you go through some hard times, but you know, okay. I can bounce back from this, but
when it's that bad,
when it's that drastic of a thing, you know, they must have been sitting there going, he did something, you know, he did.
And they're trying to solve it for themselves.
Oh, for sure.
They're trying to make sense of it themselves. And the thing that's kind of, you know, we need to realize is that these were godly friends.
Mm-hmm.
These were not like, you know, they're just, you know, casual friends that had no clue about God. These were godly friends who were trying their best to give him godly advice.
Yeah.
And yet their advice in many ways was inaccurate. And yet, on the other hand, they said some things that were really good and really profound, and things that you go, I want to underline that and claim that verse, or I want to, you know, you say that is a solid theology. I love what they said right there. So how do we tell the difference? The only way we can tell the difference is because of what we're given at the opening chapters. Mm-hmm. Again, that's why it becomes a lens. Because we know the truth at the beginning and in the end of the book, we are given another angle on it, things for us to understand it. Because we kind of know the boundaries of the book, the beginning and the end, we can make sense of what's in between. Here's some things that his friends say. For example, several of them point out that God is just and powerful. Well, as believers, we'd have to say amen.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, of course.
God is just. So they're exactly right. Not everything they say is wrong. How do we know that? Well, because of the glimpse we're given at the beginning of the book. One of his friends named Zophar says, "Can you fathom the mysteries of God?" And that's actually not a statement. It's a question, but it's a great question that really anticipates what God's going to say at the end of the book, too. So there are things that they say that are absolutely in line with good theology and correct thinking. And then there's other things that they say that are completely false. Over and over again, they make the statement that suffering is always a sign of God's judgment.
Mm-hmm.
That if you suffered, it has to be God's judgment.
Right.
That's too simplistic. That's not, we know from the opening chapters that's not true. And so when they say that, we have to look at that and say, you know, that's characteristic of the way the world thinks. That's mm-hmm. characteristic of the way godly friends think. That's characteristic of the way I'm tempted to think, but it's not accurate.
It's not accurate, right?
It's not accurate. Their underlying assumption is that bad things only happen to bad people.
Mm-hmm.
And that theology is too simplistic. It's this cause and effect, mindset that is way too simplistic and doesn't allow itself to God's broader purposes that he allows in suffering, which we kind of covered a little bit on Sunday, the
right.
other things that God could be doing
right.
in
right.
the middle of
yeah.
of our suffering mm-hmm. and our pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I can't remember exactly what you said. Hold on, let me see. I like the part where you were, and maybe we'll get more into it as the podcast goes, but the part where you said the suffering is always bigger than me. I like that, how you made that point.
Yeah.
You know, that you're like, there's something else. There's a spiritual warfare that is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the suffering that we're going through is there, and it stinks sometimes to go through it. You
absolutely
know?
Yeah.
I think we've all had our fair share of things that you go, this just stinks, you know. But in a way, it also draws us closer to God, you know, and it reaffirms that he's there for us and that there is a plan, you know, mm-hmm. even though we can't see it sometimes, you know, that it's there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a cousin whose first husband was killed in a car accident by a drunk driver.
Right, right.
You know, it's hard to explain
yes.
why he deserved that.
Right.
You
right.
know, why that was it wasn't deserved,
right.
you know.
Right.
Yet we live in a world where there's a bigger battle between good and evil, mm-hmm. and it plays itself out mm-hmm. in the tragedies of this world.
Sure.
And so it is bigger than us. And we try to understand it. We try to, it's just, we are so tempted to just kind of simplify it down to, well, if you did something wrong, you're going to get punished. If you did something right. That's a childish way
right.
to think about
right.
it. It's a kind of a children's perspective rather than a wise perspective mm-hmm. to see this bigger truth. And that's where Job's friends were over and over again. And even at the end, near the end of the book of Job, God says this to his friends, he speaks directly to Job's friends, and he says, "You have not spoken the truth about me."
Right.
So
right.
that also becomes a lens. Go, okay, not everything they said was accurate. Mm-hmm. And so this is, to me, really helpful. That's why I think it's a good idea to read the whole book of Job together, mm-hmm. because you get the beginning and the end, and right. it helps us interpret the middle. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why God gives us this glimpse behind the curtain. He lets us see what Job couldn't see and what was happening in the heavenly realm. Now, you and I, we don't usually get that with our own suffering.
Right.
We don't right. get to see it. But that's what the book of Job is meant to do for us. It's mm-hmm. meant to see kind of this, again, Salehammer is so helpful here. He says, you know, we tend to say Job is explaining why suffering happens. It's not really. It's explaining why suffering happened for Job.
Right.
It really is only explaining Job's suffering, not yeah. our suffering.
Right.
But by knowing what was going on for Job, we can then, you know, make the connection for us and to say that, you know, the same is true for us. There's things going on behind the scenes that we can't see, but God is still in control. Mm-hmm. He's limiting mm-hmm. what's happening in my life. It's filtered through his fingers. He's going to use it for my refinement mm-hmm. and my restoration. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he'll make all things right.
Yeah.
One day.
Yeah. Yeah. I've noticed, you know, that with my, you know, with my own suffering and stuff, you know, not to like get too into it, but like, you know, my wife and I are kind of going through some sadness right now. But, the one thing that I have noticed is that, I didn't know, you know, like when you get to share in someone's suffering, they also share theirs too, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I've gotten a lot of great conversations with our church family, and I had no idea, you know what I mean? That they were going through something or they went through something similar, yeah. you know? And it's kind of like that, in a way it's reaffirming that this is part of God's plan, you know what I mean? That it stinks.
Yeah.
The suffering stinks. You know, like your cousin and other suffering that has been going on. But maybe in that way it pulls people closer, you know, together. You know, there's an event down at Kit Carson, and they pull all these hockey teams together, right? And they do like an Iron Man event, basically. And the more you win, the more you play. Right. But the whole reason why it started was because there was these two, young men, and they passed away. And so their moms, who didn't know each other, they just knew that their sons liked to play hockey. And they were like, well, maybe we'll pull, you know, maybe we'll have a few of their friends come together. Well, you know, now it's been going on for 2 years, and they have to like turn teams away, basically, because they don't have the room for them. Wow. That's how many people are signing up, right? And is one of the moms I thought said something really cool the last event, where she said, you know, I would have never thought that I would have met the other mom that is putting on the event in this way, mm-hmm. but I knew this was supposed to happen, you know what I mean? Like, I of course would give anything to have my son back, but I now have met this other mom, and because of that, that is the greatness of what the plan is going on right now. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
so
I do. Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, I think that is like, it was a really neat way of saying that it brought the two of them together, that through their suffering, now they have become each other's foundation and their support, you know?
Maybe that's a little bit of why, I mean, for sure, that's a little bit of the reason why God gave us the book of Job,
sure.
so that we know we're not alone.
Right.
Suddenly you realize that this is a universal experience
yeah.
of God's people throughout the ages. I say God's people, it's universal of everyone, but God's people are the ones who really wrestle with, why did God allow this?
Yes, yes.
You know, maybe everybody does, but to the degree that you believe in God, then that makes suffering even harder.
Yes, it does.
Because you go, why did this happen when God could have controlled it?
Yes.
And so God gave us Job to help us see that we're not alone. And that's what's happening in the conversations you're having, and that hockey mom was having, those conversations where connecting with one others that are going through suffering, you realize that this is bigger than us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Job, unfortunately, was by himself when this happened. I mean, it seems like, you know, from the little we know, his wife didn't seem like she was much help. And his friends, you know, after that first week of silence, they weren't that much help either.
Yeah.
I just, when you were talking, I flipped over to something I'm going to say this Sunday.
Sure.
Because it ties in perfectly. Yeah. But Chuck Swindoll said this. He said, the silence of God's voice will make you wonder if he is even there. Mm. And the absence of God's presence will make you wonder if he even cares.
Mm-hmm.
He is, and he does.
Yeah.
And his point is that, you know, when you go through this, you feel like you're all alone.
Yeah.
And not with there's no one there with you, and there's nobody even, God's not even there.
Right.
And there's something very powerful that happens when we come along and realize this is part of the human experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. I don't have to beat myself up. I don't have to feel like I did something wrong. This is something unique. It's just part of the story of humanity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and it also, like you were saying, like that Job, you know, was kind of going through it alone, and us as Christians and being a church family, and you know, it's like we can support each other in all of that, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's kind of what the book is trying to show us, is that, you know, we're not really meant to walk this walk alone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And this, interesting, if it is the oldest book in the Bible, which arguably it is, this is sort of the oldest struggle that people have.
Yeah.
The struggle of how do we make sense of this, and to have something to hold on to, a companion. I kind of said Sunday, maybe Job can be your friend through suffering.
Yeah.
And I think that is that sense that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also teased at the end of Sunday, I told people I was going to tell them why I think Job is a wizard.
Yes. Yes. I do remember that.
That's going to sound really weird if you didn't hear that. So
yeah.
I'll give you some context for that. Job, the very first line of the book of Job, the opening verse says, in the land of Uz, and Uz is spelled U-Z, in the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. And I kind of talked about, so he comes from Uz. So apparently he lives somewhere over the rainbow.
Right, right.
but he wasn't a wizard. He wasn't the wizard of Uz.
Right.
But now I'm going to correct that a little bit.
Okay.
I'm going to say that in one way, there's a way that we can think about him as a wizard.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I mean. All right. So hang on. Before you like turn this podcast off right now, hang on. The word wizard actually is an old English word that comes from the word wise. To be a wizard is someone. It first meant way back in Middle English to be wise. Wise, W-Y-S, is added to the suffix ard, wizard, right. A-R-D, and it just means someone who is wise. That's what it originally meant. It's only later that it kind of turned into those who practice magic or sorcery or those kinds of things. But originally, the word just meant, you know, you were a wise person. Someone like, if you were drunk, you call him a drunkard. If you were wise, you'd call him a wizard. And so, and if that's the case, at least for that definition, Job was incredibly wise. Matter of fact, that's the whole point, that he feared God, and he is... This wisest man on all the earth. So he lived in a place called Uz, and he was wise. So I'm going to say he was the Wizard of Uz.
He was the Wizard of Uz. I like that.
And in the truest sense of wizard, you know, I like
right.
words.
So right. Yes, I know. Yeah.
Geek out over words. Yeah. But anyway, in the truest sense of wizard, the original sense of wizard, he was the Wizard of Uz. And if you think about it, even in the story, the Wizard of Oz, that wizard actually didn't have any magical powers.
No.
Anyway, mm-hmm. he's called a wizard, but he only pretended to. He
right.
just kind of set it up so it looked like he did. But in
right.
the end, he didn't help Dorothy or her companions by doing something magical. He helped them by just giving them good advice. You know, you need a medal, you need a diploma.
Right, right.
What else was it? Do you remember?
A brain?
No, they wanted a brain, but he's saying you don't need a brain. He's saying you just need a diploma.
Oh, that's right. You know, that's right. That's
you
right.
don't need more courage. You just need a medal. I can't remember what the other one
I can't remember
was,
either. So. The only thing I can think of is Wicked right now, the like newer version. You know, I can't think of like the older version. I can't think of the original.
Oh, yeah. Well, someone out there will let me know what the third one was.
There
but
you go. There
the,
you
whole, go. The point was even the Wizard of Oz in the original story wasn't a magical person in the end. He just appeared to be.
Right.
Job was truly a wise man. Yeah. So I'm going to call him the Wizard of Oz.
I like that. We should. That's what you should have named the series.
The Wizard of Oz. Yeah. I could have, and then people might not even come at all. But
right. Somewhere over the rainbow.
Very nice. Ryan's going to sing. I'm not jumping in on that. I'm not jumping in.
I'm not singing. I just, you know, it's like the most famous song from the Wizard
Absolutely.
Of Oz.
Absolutely. Yep, it is. It is. All right. Well, hopefully that's helpful. Let's do some listener questions.
Yeah.
Actually, we have a husband-wife team that gave questions this time.
Nice.
So I got two questions that were, and then I realized they were from a married couple. And so the husband's question was, did you enjoy riding shotgun on my drive to Westmont? I go, what? And then I thought about it, and sure. I realized what he was saying. He has a son in college in Santa Barbara, at Westmont College. And later he told me he binged a bunch of the podcasts on his drive there because he was driving by himself up to Santa Barbara and back from San Diego. So did we enjoy the ride with him?
Yeah. Well,
sure.
I know you've done that drive a lot. I think I've only done it once.
I know that drive very because our kids went to Westmont, so I can picture it exactly what he did. It's a if there's no traffic, like which is never, but if there's no traffic, let's say the middle of the night or something, you can make it in about 3 hours, 3.5 hours, maybe 3:45.
Yeah,
but it's easily 5+ hours.
Oh, for sure,
in the car one way.
Yeah.
Because of LA.
Right.
You traffic in LA.
Yeah.
So I can picture exactly.
Yeah.
I would say, yes, I enjoyed that ride with you, even though I didn't know I was on it with you. But I love the idea that you were, you know, spending the time in the car listening to Ryan and myself.
Yeah.
Talk about deeper dives into the messages. I love the fact that you did that. I can tell you, I especially enjoy the stretch between Santa Barbara and Ventura. That's a beautiful part.
That is nice.
It goes right along the coast there. Yeah. I can picture exactly. Hopefully you weren't too distracted by the waves and everything. We're able to tune into what we were talking about. But thank you very much for taking us on your road trip with you up there and back. The other question his wife asked was much more spiritual.
Okay.
She was the spiritual one. We had just finished this series called, Jesus Wants to Know, the questions that Jesus asked us. And she asked the question, well, okay, now that we know the questions that Jesus asked us, what question would you like to ask Jesus? If you could ask Jesus one question, what would it be?
Oh, wow.
That's a tough one. Do you have a... You have a thought on that?
I don't know if I do. I mean, wow.
One question to ask Jesus.
Wow. I mean, I think everybody can think of the silly ones, right? Like, at least for me, I'm always like,
wasn't thinking silly ones at all. Like, what?
Like, you couldn't have made me like 3 inches taller. Like, maybe have a little bit more athletic ability. You know what I mean? Like, those are the silly ones I think about. Yeah. But
why can't I dunk?
Why can't I dunk?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Things like that.
Especially me. I'm 6'3". Why can't I? I still can't dunk.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I can't, yeah. can't get off the ground.
Right.
Even
right.
in my heyday.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Couldn't dunk.
Yeah. Same. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, gosh, what a great question.
All right. Well, I've thought about it a little longer than you, so
sure,
I'll come back to you in a second. For me, I honestly wasn't thinking of the athletics stuff.
Right,
the silly ones. But I was thinking, honestly, when I get to heaven, I don't think I'm going to have the ability to. I mean, I feel like I'm going to just be so awestruck.
Right.
And also, we're told that then we shall know fully as we are fully known.
Right.
So maybe at that point, any of my questions won't even be necessary.
Sure.
You know, I'll see things clearly. But I have to say that it's a good setup for this series with mm-hmm. Joe, because I think most of us, our deepest question, if it boils down to one thing, are the kinds of questions that Job deals with.
Right.
Why is there so much brokenness in our world?
Yeah.
You know, when you see the stuff that just is just, you know, I'm not talking about trivial little, you know, nuisances, but just stuff that's just heart-wrenching pain that people go through.
Yeah.
You know, why?
Yeah.
And again, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know right now. So maybe that would be it. I truly believe that when we see the full picture, we'll get to the revelation says we'll get to heaven and we'll be singing that God is completely good, completely loving, completely just. And that when we understand it all, mm-hmm. we'll know that God did exactly the right thing, exactly the merciful thing, and exactly the loving thing in all those situations. But right now, probably boils down to that question.
What a great question.
Anything else that you?
I don't know. I'll do this. Give me a week to think about it.
All right.
You know, because I don't know if I've ever, you know, I mean, I think I've had all the same questions. Like, what are we, you know, like, what are we here for? Like, why is there so much suffering? Like, why did this happen? Why does that happen?
Yeah.
You know, those kind of questions. But, you know, I think when we finally get to heaven, you know, I don't know if any of those things will even really matter, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
You know,
I think they won't. My hunch is they won't matter because we'll be satisfied. We'll see.
Right.
We'll see how it all fits together.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it really does circle us back to the book of Job. And that is, we are meant to understand what God is doing for Job's sake, but we're meant to identify with Job and his friends in our own suffering to say, we don't get it.
We
don't get the luxury of having that heavenly perspective. One day we will.
Right.
And when we do, it'll make sense to us too.
Right.
And I think that's what is so powerful
about
Job,
the
Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz. Yes, for sure. For sure. Yeah, that's so great. I often tell myself, like sometimes when, you know, I'm on, you know, stage leading worship, and I sometimes think about, you know, like, what would heaven be like? You know, like, would we all, you know, be singing praises? Would we be, you know? And then I often, then my mind starts going like, well, okay, if Jesus is there and all the, you know, we're all there and stuff, like, would I be in the band? Right? Because I'm like, if I'm there, then that means that, like, Phil Wickham's there and Brandon Lake is there.
Right.
And, you know, Chris Brown from Elevation, like they would be the ones that would be leading, right?
Yeah.
So then I kind of think like, am I an usher? You know? Like, I kind of start, my mind starts to think sometimes, I'm like, well, wait a minute, like, what would be my job in heaven?
I think I'm going to be in the band. I think it's going to be a huge, huge group, and you're going to be near the front.
Okay. No, I'm going to be in the back.
And you're going to turn around and look way in the back, and I'm going to be back there with one cymbal. Jesus is going to give me one cymbal, and he's going to go, "Don't mess it up, Doug. Don't mess it up." And I'm going, I got you.
I'm here.
And then you'll turn around to see me, and you won't be able to see me because my face will be blocked.
Right. Yeah.
How am I supposed to tell you?
Yeah. How am I supposed to know who you are?
Yeah. I'll be there with the one. I'll be the guy with the single cymbal.
Yeah. Exactly. That'll be me. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. I love that. I love that picture.
I always
imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I think about that. So I don't know. I think, you know, I don't know. I just, it's silly, but you know, I think about it sometimes, you know. Because as a worship band, and, you know, like yourself as a pastor, you know, it's like we're supposed to be vessels, you know, for what God wants to do in our church and in our lives. And, you know, it's like, you know, once we finally get there, I'm like, he's right there.
Yeah.
Like, my job's done.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, I'll be leading a Bible study at the end of the hallway. It'll be the very last. You have to go by every other doorway. And then it's like, oh, there you go. The broom closet has been converted into a Bible study. And Doug's in here doing a little talk on Job. It's exactly. good for you.
Yeah, exactly. Ryan's running a worship, worship 101, you know?
for 3-year-olds. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, hopefully this has been an encouragement to you to think, you know, that we don't get the luxury of seeing behind the curtain, but if we did have that, as we do in the book of Job for Job's circumstances, I think we would be comforted. We would be amazed to know what God is happening behind the scenes and how God's at work in our lives. And in the meantime, he calls us to trust him, that there are things going on that we can't see, but we've never lost. We will never be outside of God's reach, his love, or his leading in our lives. This comes from a message I gave on May 11th, 2025. It's called "This is a Test." This is only a test. If you want to listen to it or listen to it again, get it at greenvalleychurch.com. Thanks, Ryan, and for our enthusiastic listeners and viewers for joining us. Maybe you're on a drive somewhere. Thanks for taking us along. Until next time, this has been Unhurried with me, your host, Doug Kyle. I look forward to talking soon.